Well, this parable that Jesus shares today is a very intense one about the owner of a vineyard whose unruly tenants want to keep the produce for themselves and keep even the property for themselves. Maybe you saw the story in the news this week about the Airbnb tenant in Los Angeles who has been staying at a property that she rented now for over 500 days and refuses to leave. There's a big legal battle going on and lots of back and forth of who's done what wrong to one another. And a judge has even ruled that the owner of the property does not have a legal reason to evict her. And probably the worst part of the situation is that the Airbnb property is a guest house to his own house. So they're like living like within yards of each other, which has to be absolutely miserable. But when I saw that story this week, I thanked the person who put that in the news cycle this week because they did preachers this Sunday a big favor if they're following the lectionary, because that story is just too perfect. Tenants who refuse to leave and hand over control of the property. What more could you ask for? So the tenants of this in Jesus' parable are not just there to live, sort of like an Airbnb guest. They're there to steward and to tend the vineyard while the owner is away. And they are going to be accountable to him when he returns for the way that they have treated it. But these tenants see a chance to seize control. They rebuff his efforts to send messengers, to establish contact with them, and they even beat and kill his messengers. Finally, he pulls out his last resort, his son, thinking that they will listen to him and show him the respect that they would have showed to the owner. But they see an opportunity. They think that if the heir is dead, they will at last have the vineyard for themselves. This is a very confrontational message that Jesus has for the religious leaders of his day, because they are the tenants entrusted to care for God's people and to shepherd them. Some parables are very mysterious and, you know, require a lot of mulling over and contemplating, but this parable, the meaning of it is pretty straightforward and pretty clear. And we also know that because the leaders who are listening to Jesus tell this story are incensed, and they want very much to arrest Jesus to stop these inflammatory teachings. But the crowd is just drinking it up. They are loving Jesus' teaching, and they're afraid of what the people might do. Ironically, when the leaders do get their way, they are fulfilling the parable that Jesus is speaking, killing the Son, the ultimate messenger, whom they ought to respect as they respect God himself. What stands out to me about this parable for today is Jesus' description of how God reaches out to his people over and over again, hoping to get a message through even when they have rejected him over and over. And there's a real life story that came to my mind, a story that I want to share with you today on this theme of rejection and how it can shape us and our response to it. It's the story of a man named Edward Liskelin and his life project, which is a building project in Florida called Coral Castle. It's about 25 miles south of Miami. Has anyone ever been there? Oh, great. Okay. The sermon's for you. I still have never been. I hope to go sometime. Ed had a background in stonemasonry and logging, and he used those skills in an artistic project that has become this tourist attraction. He took coral stone and cut it into giant blocks and shapes like moons and crescents and moved them without electrical equipment. He only used pulleys and ropes and levers. And he constructed a castle-like structure and a sculpture garden around it out of about 1,000 tons of coral rock. And some people say that his project rivals Stonehenge in its size and its scale and in the mystery of how this guy single-handedly built this by himself. By all accounts, Ed was something of a quirky guy. He lived on the property pretty much as a hermit, but he was friendly and would give tours. And when visitors came to Coral Castle, he would tell the story of why he built this place. He was from Latvia in Europe, And as a young man, he was engaged to be married. But his fiancée, Agnes, broke off their engagement the day before they were going to get married. He was heartbroken. He left his home country and came to America, which is where he began to work in the logging industry in the Pacific Northwest. At some point, he contracted tuberculosis and was told that he needed to live somewhere with a little less rain and a little more sunshine. So he moved all the way down to Florida. And that is when he threw himself into this creative project that would become his life's work, that he dedicated to Agnes, the woman who had broken his heart. He invited her more than once to come and to see this castle he had built for her, but she never did. And in his last letter from her, he found out that she was engaged to someone else. The story about Ed and his life and the way he responded to rejection is fascinating and offbeat and also sad. He appears to have never gotten over his disappointment and his heartbreak. And yet he also threw himself into this creative project and created a place of beauty that people have been enjoying for decades now. So, what does the story of Ed, this eccentric artist, have to do with Jesus' parable? They're both stories of different ways of responding to rejection. Ed's rejection by his fiance, and on the other hand, God's response to his people's rejection of his message and his messengers, and even ultimately of his own son. Experiences of rejection are not ones that we love to dwell on. It's probably one of the toughest emotions that we can feel, but it's unavoidable at some point in this world. Rejection from a job opportunity that we wanted, or an offer we placed on a house that we really wanted to live in, those can hurt, but the type of rejection that hurts us the most is the personal kind. The person we hoped would go to prom with us or go on a date with us or maybe marry us, when they reject us, that can go to our core sense of self. The rejection of our love is one of the most difficult to endure. And we have choices about how we will respond to rejection, whether we will become defensive and bitter, walling ourselves off against pain, whether we find a creative project to throw ourselves into like Ed did, or whether we find ways to heal our broken hearts and hope again and put ourselves out there again and take the risk of new relationships. So in this story about the owner, his attempts to reach his tenants are met with obstinance, violence, and rejection. And this, Jesus is very clear, is a story about God. God has entrusted his kingdom to his people, especially to the religious leaders, and they have sought to keep that control for themselves. When God reaches out to his people, he's trying to do two things: to remind them that he is still the ultimate authority over the vineyard, and two, to invite them back into a relationship with him. Jesus will speak again of this sense of rejection, humanity rejecting God, two chapters later in Matthew, when he says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who were sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings." Jesus longs to bring God's people to himself, to protect them and to nourish them. But he says, quite sadly, "You were not willing." In the season after Christmas, there's a Eucharistic prayer that we use. It's prayer C, that we sometimes call the Star Wars prayer because it references galaxies and planets and interstellar space. And it names this history of humans' rejection of God's message of love. "You, Lord, brought forth the human race. You made us rulers of creation. But we turned against you and betrayed your trust, and we turned against one another. Again and again, you called us to return. Through prophets and sages, you revealed your righteous law, and in the fullness of time, you sent your only son, born of a woman, to fulfill your law, to open for us the way of freedom and peace." It's so important that in the midst of this intense parable, that we see God's heart for his people, that he keeps extending an olive branch over and over again, making a way for us to be reconciled to him. God doesn't sit around nursing his hurt feelings, as sometimes we have to do when we've been rejected. And God does not become vengeful. The crowd, in answering Jesus' question about what the owner might do, they think that the owner will come back and kill those tenants and then give the vineyard to someone else. But Jesus only affirms the second half of what they say. He acknowledges that God will give the vineyard to those who want to receive it, and that when he is revealed as the cornerstone, not all will believe, and that will have hard consequences. But they come out of people's rejection of God, not God coming and wreaking vengeance upon them. The rejected God does not come back to kill his enemies. He keeps on reaching out, even giving us his most precious gift, the gift of his Son. God makes himself vulnerable to us when he comes to earth and takes our flesh upon us. And he makes himself the most vulnerable when he offers up his life, even to the point of death, that those enemies who wanted to kill him might be forgiven and reconciled. And as we hear in this parable, it is in the death and resurrection of Jesus that God opens up this relationship of love to all people, not just to the people of Israel. And so I hope today you can hear God reaching out, calling to us, "I want a relationship with you, and I've been waiting. Come and let me gather you close to myself. Take shelter under my wings. Let me heal your broken heart with my love." I first heard about Ed and his story of his broken heart from a musician named Andrew Peterson, who wrote a song called Coral Castle. And he tells the story of how Ed came across this project in trying to find healing. He writes the song from Ed's point of view, and there's one line that stood out to me I'd like to share with you today. It says, "I don't need her love to love her all I can. I don't need her love to love her all I can." Ed didn't need Agnes to love him back in order to keep expressing that love all throughout his life. And those words are in essence what God tells us at the cross, that God doesn't need our love to love us all he can. And thank goodness that God's love is sturdier and stronger than that, that he hasn't waited for us to love him back or to love him first, but continues to send those messages of love, even when we ignore them or dismiss them or even rage against them. God keeps putting himself out there over and over in hopes that we will hear and welcome his message of love. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.